I assume it's now. Okay. So we did the laws of kosher last time, and I would like to continue in terms of the expression of these laws and their extension for the B'nai Noach. Now, insofar as kosher itself, as you know, a B'nai Noach can keep kosher, and we explain the four benefits of kashrus on the four headings that it came under. And the one was idolatry, one was removed from the primitive, and then you had the benefit for the keeping the Jewish people. they were keeping their own identity, so they shouldn't eat together with the Gentiles and lose their monotheistic and Torah beliefs. And then there was the concept of raising the person to the higher sphere, the usual purpose of Torah, which is to get man to be involved in the higher sphere and to exercise the supremacy of his soul, his intellect, his mind, over his sensual nature. And a B'nai Noach can do that for those benefits, except one wouldn't apply to the B'nai Noach, but the other three would. Now, there is another question, and Robin raised this question. The question is, what about a B'nai Noach being a vegetarian? Because we know that originally, when the Torah was given, when Adam was created, he was not permitted to eat meat, as it states in the beginning of Genesis. That I have given you all the grass of the field to eat, and the right that man has to eat meat was only enunciated in the Bible after the flood. That was a special communique given to Noah. So before that time, Adam was not permitted to eat meat. So the question arises, is there any benefit for Ben Noach, or even for Ben Israel, if he wishes to take upon himself the abstention from meat and being strictly a vegetarian? Is there any benefit in doing that? Is that something which is preferable, since God originally told Adam that he's allowed to eat all the vegetables and all the fruits, but meat he was not permitted to eat? That's the question that was raised. Now, I'd like to first of all clarify what the law was exactly for Adam. There is a question here. The question is that when you look at Talmud, the Tractate of Sanhedrin, we find that there is an opinion there that Adam received actually all seven laws. Which would mean one of them be not to eat the limb of a that is removed from an animal during its lifetime. And that's one of the seven, as you know. Now, the question is that how could he possibly receive that law as one of the seven if he wasn't permitted to eat any meat at all? So certainly he would not be able to eat the limb of an animal that was removed during its lifetime if he can't eat meat, period. Now, Maimonides, because of this, it seems, states that Adam only received six laws to begin with, not seven. And he minuses the law of eating the limb of an animal that was removed during its lifetime. He says that only came in after Noah, and that would seem to make sense because of what we've learned. Even though Maimonides doesn't say that's the reason for its classification, but he does have that classification that originally there were six, and then the one that was added was not to eat the limb of a living animal. That was added at the time of Noah, when Noah became permissible for Noah to eat meat. So that's logical. Of course, the question that is raised upon Maimonides is, according to Maimonides, there should have been seven also, because what about the prohibition against eating meat? So why does Maimonides say that Adam received six commandments? It should have been seven. What about the commandment of not eating meat? So the answer that is given, as that question is concerned, is that Maimonides is only listing commandments. See, when you list commandments, for instance, in the 613 commandments of the Torah. Now, there's a whole science about how exactly to list commandments, because if you look at the Torah, you look at the Bible, it's hard to know what is an individual commandment and what is not, and you can come up with many more than 613 or less. So that's why Maimonides, who wrote a special work on the 613 commandments, he had an introduction with 14 chapters on rules of how you determine what is a commandment and what is not. It's a whole science. But in that system, Maimonides mentions that we never count any commandment that was not given permanently. Of course, there were certain things in the Torah that God commanded Moses, and those commandments did not were only for the time being. They didn't exist afterwards. For instance, blowing the trumpets when the community moved, and exactly how they had to live at that time, which is in Numbers. So that was only during that time that they had that commandment, but that was not a permanent commandment for generations and generations. So Maimonides makes it clear that we do not count a commandment when we're trying to list the 613. Any commandment which is not permanent, doesn't make the list. Because it's not a commandment that is for generations and generations. And the 613 that were given at Sinai, when we say 613, we mean 613 permanent commandments for eternal, as the Torah says, it is a commandment, an everlasting commandment to your generations. The everlasting commandments are the ones that we count. So the answer here is given as to why did Maimonides say that Adam received seven, and one of the seven being not to eat meat. So the answer is given that Maimonides himself says he did never classify commandments when you enumerate. You don't enumerate commandments that were only given for a specific amount of time but weren't permanent. And since the commandment not to eat meat was not a permanent one, it was only given till the time of Noah, so that's why Maimonides does not list it. That's one of the answers that is given. I'm just mentioning this to you, as parenthetically as we go through this. But let's get back to the main question. The question was, there still is a scholar in the Talmud, a reputable scholar, who states that Adam received really all seven commandments. And he states one is not to eat the limb of a living that was removed from a living animal. And the question, of course, is how could he make such a statement if Adam was not permitted to eat any meat, period? Now, the answer, the Tosafists raised this question right on that, right in the tractate of Sanhedrin, right on the spot. And the Tosafists give a very straightforward, logical answer. And they state, I'm going to just use my own formulation. What the Tosafists say is that even though Adam was not permitted to, under certain circumstances, to eat meat, it does not mean that he was a vegetarian. Now, how is that possible? Can anyone, perhaps somebody wants to volunteer an answer? How is it possible to say that Adam,
okay, we got two, and the first one we'll strike. He said that he eat fish. Mm-mm. And fish is not considered meat.
No, but there's no law of
The second logical thing would be that if the animals died, then he would eat the animals that died naturally.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. That's what the Tosafists say. Tosafists say that Adam really, there was no prohibition for him to eat meat. And this is important. There was no prohibition to eat meat. He did not have to be a vegetarian. The only thing was he couldn't take life. That was the commandment. So if an animal died, then he'd be allowed to eat it. Or if he came upon a kill, he'd be allowed to eat the kill. However, if a limb was removed from that animal during its lifetime, then he would not be permitted to eat that. So therefore, there is no problem in the Tosafot. Even though Adam was not permitted to eat meat, he still had the violation, the mitzvah, the commandment, of not eating the limb of a living animal. Of course, actually, he wasn't, strictly speaking, not permitted to eat meat. He was not permitted to kill in order to eat meat. But he was allowed to eat meat. He was not obligated to be a vegetarian. Now, this fits in, really, when you look at the verse in Genesis. It doesn't speak about a prohibition of eating meat. The verse lends itself to this interpretation, because the verse states, if you look at it, it's Genesis 1:29. And God said, "Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree on which is the fruit yielding seed, so it shall be food." Now, what it means is, over here, if you take a look before, 28, for instance, "And God blessed them and said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves on the earth.' And then God says, 'Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree,'" which means to say that God did not give him, even though God gave him dominion, but he restricted his dominion. See, 28 is the general statement, where God gave man dominion. But then in 29, he restricts it. And he says, "But insofar as food is concerned, your dominion is limited to the vegetative. You can't exercise your dominion over the animal kingdom and use them for food." That is the plain interpretation of Exodus 28 and 29. But it does say anywhere that he is not permitted to eat any meat. But what the concept is, as you read 28 and 29, is that his dominion, he has dominion over the animal kingdom. In other words, he could do he has a certain control over nature that the animal kingdom doesn't have. He controls them. He can move them out. He creates cities. He has the ability to move them around to use them in a certain sense. But he cannot kill them food. Okay. So therefore, there is no problem with the scholar of the Talmud that maintains that Adam really received all seven laws. Okay. Now, what happens next? What happens next is that man sins, and then God brings the flood. And the flood is the Noah and his family is saved from the flood, and the rest of the civilized world perishes. Now, after that, God says to Noah that you can't eat meat, okay? And the statement is in 9:3, okay? "Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. Even as the green herb have I given you all things." Okay, "but flesh with its life, which is its blood, you shall not eat." Okay, the question we have to raise is, why did God change the commandments? Okay, we know God doesn't change his mind. So why did God...
Rabbi?
Yes.
A question has been asked that... Did Adam make sacrifices of animals?
Yes.
All right.
"That I make recourse to the oral law. As a matter of fact, the Maimonides states that Adam sacrificed and Noah sacrificed in the same place where the temple mount is."
Okay. In that vein, was Adam permitted to eat the sacrifice, or was it only burnt offerings?
Only burnt offerings.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Now the so now the question is, what happened? Why did God suddenly allow man to eat flesh, eat meat, to kill, actually? Okay. This, in order to understand this, what we have to do is, actually, we have to understand the basic philosophy of Torah, basic principle of Torah. And we've come across it, but I think we should really focus on it a little more. You see, the concept, the philosophy of Torah is two things, the philosophy of Torah, and then also, what is the nature? Why was Adam really prohibited from eating meat? Those two points we have to understand. If we understand those two points, then I think we'll have the solution to this problem. Okay. Let's take the second point first, actually. I think it would be better if we go that way. The second point was, why was Adam prohibited to eat, to kill animals in order to eat them? Okay. Any suggestions? Now,
could you repeat the question, please?
Okay. The question is, can anyone explain why God prohibited Adam from eating, from killing animals in order to eat them?
Okay, we got one.
Because the animals were in submission to Adam.
Because the animals were in submission to Adam.
And God wouldn't allow him to kill them because it would be so easy.
And God would not allow him to kill them for food because it would have been so easy.
It would have been easy?
Yes.
Well,
because he had dominion over them. He could just walk right up to them and kill them.
Well, we seem to be doing that right now.
Well, no, we shoot them from a long way.
Well, we raise them and we kill them.
All right, the second one is that God's giving them time to replenish the earth, the animals.
He's giving them time.
The animals time to multiply and fill the earth.
I would assume there were plenty of animals around.
All right, we're assuming there are plenty of animals around.
Oh, I see. You mean to say at first, in order that there should be a certain amount of animals. I see what you're saying. All right, okay. What I like to do is, I like to always get the philosophy, try to get the philosophy from the Torah itself. Let's look at the verses and see if Genesis maybe has a clue here for what the reason is. You see, take a look at 28 again. 28 and 29 go together. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Replenish the earth and subdue it. This means that man is given the ability, unlike any other animal, man is given the ability to subdue the earth. That is really progress, technological progress. And then he says, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Okay? And then God, in 29, he restricts it. I believe in you every herb-bearing seed and every tree which yields fruit, to you it shall be for food. So, really, what is going on in these two verses? What is these statements? God is giving man dominion over the fish and over the animals, and then he says, "But I'm restricting your dominion." Why do you think God would restrict man's dominion? The answer, I believe, is an intrinsic one. It's derivable directly from these verses. What it means is when man receives dominion, when God gives man dominion, what it means is that man has certain rights in the system. Who sets up the system? God sets up the system. And that's why we one time spoke before, we said there can't be any concept of justice if you do not believe in God. Because justice means that there's someone who set up the system and you have no right to break the system. But if there's nobody behind the system, there's just no law. So I can kill anybody, do anything. I didn't do anything really, because in whose eyes did I do something bad? Maybe in the person's eyes who I killed, but I don't have to worry about him. He's not around there anymore anyway. So the only time you have a system of justice is if you have some being behind the system that sets it up. And now you're violating, you're doing something wrong, because God has given you certain rights, but not other rights. And you've broken your assigned position in the universe. Okay? Now, in verse 28, God is assigning man a position. And in verse 29, he's limiting it. What is God saying, basically? Basically, God is saying to man as follows. You have certain rights that I give you, but when I restrict your rights, you must also comply. Why? Because man must always know one thing, that everything in the universe really is God's. And that's what we say in Psalms, that the earth and everything that exists in it belongs to the Creator, to the Almighty. Man must be aware of this philosophy. This is important, because if man becomes egocentric and just thinks that everything is his, then he has no relationship with God, he has no relationship with the source of all reality and all existence, and he becomes even worse than the animal, because the animal naturally is able, because of his instincts, to stay within the framework that God created for it. But man is a being that is, in a sense, limitless. He can go wild, and he can forget the Creator and forget the nature of his existence, and therefore defy God and destroy the order which God created in the earth. So God said to man, "I'm giving you dominion, but I'm restricting you." Why? Why was the restriction? The restriction was always to remind man that this is not his world. This is God's world, and that he has to live in accordance with the way God designed it. He has certain rights, but these rights were given to him by the Creator, and they're not his own. And at the outset of creation, God said to man, "You have no right to change, to make any change in so far as the species are concerned. The species is something which I have created and I designed, and this is my design. You cannot infringe on that design in nature. You can't make that change." Now, I want you to understand this. This is an important principle in Torah. That is, that whenever we say, like, for instance, you're familiar with the law that if you happen upon, the law in Deuteronomy, that if you happen upon a nest with a bird and the mother is resting on the eggs, so you're not permitted to take both. You must send away the mother and take the eggs. And the Talmud states that anyone that says that the reason for that law is because God has pity on the eggs and on the mother, is on the birds, in other words, that is erroneous. That's not true. Why is that erroneous? Because the Talmud maintains that God doesn't have pity on the bird. The reason why God gave the law is not for the bird. It's not for the bird's benefit. It's for man's benefit. That man should learn compassion. That man should learn he has limits. That he can't just. As a matter of fact, one of the scholars says the reason is that man should realize that he's not allowed to make a species extinct. And we see that concept from the ark, because in the ark, every species that existed in that area was taken into the ark. And the reason is because God didn't want any of the species to be lost. So you see, it's God's will that that all the species should always survive, that's why the Torah gave the law. You shouldn't take the mother and the eggs. The reason is that a person should realize that you don't destroy a whole species. You're not permitted to do that, because that's a change in God's world, and you're not permitted to do that. You have certain rights, but you have limitations. Now, when God gave man the mandate, the ruling, that he's not permitted to eat meat, what God said to him basically was, "You cannot change my creation just as you see fit." Now, it wasn't because God was concerned about the species. It was because of man's perfection. Now, man must realize that there are plenty of animals, right? Man must realize that he is unique, but he can only live properly when he realizes his perfection, which is, he understands his place in the universe, what he was designed to be. And he has to recognize that the universe belongs to God, and God allows him and gives him certain dominion. So these two verses go together very well. Verse 28 is where God gives man dominion. But in verse 29, he wants him to remember where this dominion comes from. This dominion comes from God. And how does man remember that? By restricting himself, by not being able to kill an animal. He can't interfere with the order of the species. That order was created by God, and he must recognize, by abstention from killing, he is actively recognizing every day that this is really God's world, this is God's order. I have certain rights, but I can't just come in here and make changes at will without God's permission. That's why man first had the prohibition against killing an animal in order to eat. Okay. Now, the question is, that's a very nice concept. Why did God change it when it came to Noah? Okay. Now, here we have to go into a concept that is an important part of Torah, and that is that God relates to man in two ways. See, first, God relates to man when he sets up the system, he sets it up in a perfect way. Then, if man is weak, then God makes a change. I'll give you an example. Sometimes, I'll give you an example. By Balaam. You know the case of Balaam. Balaam was hired to curse the Israelites. And first, if you take a look, God says to Balaam, he says, no, he says, you shouldn't go with them. You shouldn't go with those people that are hiring you. You should not curse the people. And then Balaam persists and keeps on asking God, and finally God says, okay, he says, you can go. But you can only say those things which I tell you, you see. Now, the question of, here again is, how could God change his mind? All right? So, the answer is as follows. The truth of the matter is that God originally tries to have man work in the perfect system. The truth of the matter is God didn't want Balaam to go. It wouldn't be any good for him. It doesn't do him any good. There's no reason for him to go. But when Balaam persisted, Balaam was saying to God, look, I can't refuse these people. This is my livelihood. This is what I do. I can't refuse them. I have to go. So the God says, okay, if that's the case, you want to satisfy that emotion, I don't think you should go at all. But if you feel you can't refuse, you're not capable, then you can give in to that emotion, but you cannot say what you wish when you get there. You're restricted. So first, God really gives man the perfect way. Perfect way for Balaam would have been to be big enough and say, look, there's no reason for me to go. God's command was not to go. I am a better man if I don't go. But he couldn't do that. He was weak. So he kept asking God and pleading. God said, okay, you want to give into the emotion? You can't be on the same level that I wanted you to be, but this much you can never do. And that is, you must restrain, you must control your speech, and you must not say anything other than that which I tell you. Okay. So God many times allows for man's weakness and changes, makes certain changes which allow for man's weakness. You see, that is especially true with regard to Adam and Eve, that at first man was living in the garden, and he had a different kind of a life. But then once he sinned, God made certain changes in order to allow him to continue. Because the truth of the matter is, once a person sins, he should really cease to exist, because he doesn't exist. When God creates the world, each thing has a specific description. If you get out of that description, then there's no reason for you to exist. But God has what we call the attribute of kindness, it's called. And that means the attribute of kindness, let me make this clear, it doesn't mean that there's an emotion of kindness in God. God has no emotion. But we call it the attribute of kindness because God acts in a way in which he makes adjustments so that man might not be able to live on the highest level, but he could live on a lower level. For instance, you find this in the prophets with when Samuel criticized the children of Israel for asking for a king. But then he said, okay, you can have the king. That's another example. Really, they should have been on the level where they didn't need the king. The prophet